Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
And we're kicking off episode 227 of the MTG Pro Tutor podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Sean Penrod, your host. This show is brought to you by the patrons. Thank you so much for your support. The website, the editing, the show notes are all provided by support from the patrons. So thank you so much. It really means the world to me that this show gets to go on because of you. And as a thank you, each and every month, I do a patron exclusive giveaway. And the prize support is actually provided by Paragon City Games. So Paragon City Games, thank you so much for your support as well. I encourage you to go and check out ParagonCityGames.com where you can see what they have going on, what community building is all about. And if you are local to Utah, then go and play at Paragon City Games. And they have a lot of fun events pretty much every day of the week. They also have non-magic things. They have a game developer workshop coming up and just really cool stuff. They're the best store that I've ever been to, and I've lived in quite a few places. And so I really, really enjoy the atmosphere and what they're doing. So that said, if you are interested in becoming a patron and throwing your hat in the ring for the patron exclusive giveaways, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon. So check that out. This weekend, we have Grand Prix Denver coming up, which is super sweet. It's one of the closer locations to me since I live in Utah, but I will not be able to make it, which is a big sad face on my end. But definitely on my radar for next year is go to more Grand Prix. I would absolutely love to get out there and do at least three or four a year, maybe even one internationally, but just not quite there yet. I love going to Magic events live and meeting up with prodigies and doing meetups and stuff like that. It's just a lot of fun, you know, for me to get out there and you know, play some Magic. So I encourage you to do that on whatever level you're at. You play with your friends, go to the game store, hit up the Grand Prix this weekend if you're in the area, but definitely play some Magic. I know that last weekend I got to play some Commander, and that was really fun. It's been a while since I've sat down to play that format, and it was a blast. We did a four-player game and a five-player game, and both games I played my Avacyn Angel of Hope deck, which is really cool because obviously my daughter is named Avacyn, and so, you know, just that deck, you know, means even more to me now, so it's really cool. So it was really cool, and being able to sit and talk about some of the hype that's going on for the Commander 17 decks that are coming out. So on that note, speaking of hype, have you been tracking Ixalan? Oh my gosh. I'm so pumped. I'm really excited for Ixalan. Like, just the imagery is really hitting me right in the feels. Like, it's really gripping me just like Innistrad did. I remember just being sucked into that world. It really connected with me. And I also remember the first image I ever saw of Theros. I didn't get super into, like, the world, but I do remember the first image I ever saw. It was Heliod, and he was sitting down, and you saw a mountain that was at his feet and just looked so small next to him. And just, the imagery just really got me. It instantly communicated, we're going to God World, you know. It just was really cool. So I'm digging what's coming out of Ixalan so far. I love what they're doing for the pre-release. Have you seen they're doing like a geocaching type event where they're going to put markers or trackers pretty much around the world, and you can go to these geocaching locations and scan them or move them or do something, and basically the community's interaction with these markers will determine the preview schedule and, you know, even some of the story of Ixalan, which is really, really cool. So I'm looking forward to that. And then they said that the four tribes of Ixalan are dinosaurs, pirates, merfolk, and vampires. And for Rivals of Ixalan, the next set, they're going to do something similar with the geocaching thing. And again, based on the interaction of the community with these markers, will determine which tribe, like, wins or gets an advantage or something like that. So I love it. I think it's really cool that Wizards is constantly thinking of new experiences for us to have, and they're pushing the boundaries of what they do and how we interact with the game, and now they're getting us to go out and do stuff. I think it's just really awesome. So kudos to them. Well, anyways, that's enough of me rambling on. You came here to listen to a great player who has made it to the upper tiers of Tournament Magic, and we definitely have that for you today. So sit down, stay tuned, and let's bring in our guest and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a level 2 judge who has 1 Grand Prix top 8 and 3 Pro Tour qualifier top 8s. Coming to us from Rumney, New Hampshire, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Ben Corsi. Ben, how you doing today?
Very good. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, man, we're happy to have you. Yeah, are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Oh, absolutely.
Sweet. Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Ben, you can do so on Twitter. He's at Ben_Kenobi, and that's with a C. So Ben, I guess, Sonobi, I don't know. But Ben_CENobi. So find him there. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him a follow-up question, what have you. But that is where you can find him on the interwebs. So Ben, tell us, Rumney, New Hampshire, are you born and raised there? Is that where you've been from?
Yep. I was born here. I moved a few towns over in Bridgewater when I was in school and stuff. And then eventually I bounced around a little bit, but I ended up back home.
Excellent. When you say school, you mean like college? You went off to college?
No. Basically grade school through high school.
Grade school. And what are you doing these days? Is work all you do? Is magic all you do? Do you have work? Are you a student? What else is filling your time?
So I actually work at a family business, Central Metal Recycling. We buy and ship recyclable metals and stuff like that. That's my like 9 to 5 or more like 8 to 3.
Not bad.
And then I travel around. Usually I'm judging Grand Prix.
Okay.
Most of the time. And actually with my recent fortune, I actually am now a partner here at Shield Comics in Plymouth.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to say in the pre-chat, you mentioned you're calling from a comic shop. So I wanted to hear more about that. Yeah. Like, you know, tell us about the shop and where is it? What do you guys do? Is it just comics? You do cards as well. So tell us about the shop.
Well, it's relatively new. The store is about 9 months old. It's right in downtown Plymouth, New Hampshire. We do mainly magic at the moment, but we are expanding into other things already, like the Star Wars Destiny and the X-Wing miniatures game, mm-hmm. as well as playing games, board games, and graphic novels.
Fun. What are all the magic events that you run?
We have our weekly modern event, which is probably our most popular on Wednesday nights, i.e. tonight. We get anywhere from 16 upwards to 24 players every Wednesday. And then we have our drafts and then our, you know, your usual like game days, right. Open house, showdowns.
Very cool. So do you have siblings? Did you grow up playing games with your family?
Not really. It was kind of a weird thing for me. Growing up, I was into fantasy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Going back as early as like watching Jim Henson's Dark Crystal,
yes,
or like the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon from the 80s, all that sort of stuff really resonated with me. I didn't even start playing games in general outside of playing like Sorry, Monopoly and your typical Parker Brothers stuff until 1994. When a friend of mine taught me how to play magic one night, we're, you know, just hanging out at my house and he's like, "Hey man, I got this game to show you." And we played for 8 hours straight all the way up until like 2-3 in the morning.
Wow. Man, that's an origin story right there, which we love to talk about. And so you had a friend over, introduced you to the game of magic and you stayed up for 8 hours. That's awesome. What was that set? What was that first set?
Revised.
Wow. Nice, dude. So what were those decks that you just, you know, played around with until 2:30 in the morning?
I know my deck was green. It's a little hazy because I did fall asleep mid game. I do remember I had a giant spider with like 6 +1/+1 counters on it. or maybe it was damage counters. Cause I do remember when me and my friend first started playing, we didn't understand that damage erased at the end of every turn.
Uh-huh.
So like you could, you know, you attack with a 1/1 and block with a spider, you put a damage counter on it, and then if you have a lightning bolt next turn, you could kill it off. I think everybody has those early times when you're playing Magic when you don't quite understand what's going on, but it's still off.
That's awesome. In fact, it's been a while since we talked about that. And just last episode, I brought it up again. Some of the fun stories I've heard just through doing the podcast, like foil lands tapping for 2 mana. That was always a fun one. I heard somebody say that. So yeah, it's always so cool to think of, you know, those early days and what we did and didn't understand what we were playing. And man, so did you dive in right away? You've been in since Revised, AKA, do you have a really sweet collection?
My friend taught me how to play and all of his cards were like from Revised and all those sets. The first product that I ever bought, and I actually hunted one down because it was, I found it, at a GP, was the 4th edition 2-player starter. Me and my family were on, vacation in Missouri and we're at the mall and I saw it. I'm like, this is awesome. And my grandfather, he thought it was cool and he gave me the $20 to buy it, and like, I opened it up, and like, I was just blown away at the, because like you open it up and you see the first card in each deck, and it was Sarah Angel and Shivan Dragon.
Yeah.
And my mind just exploded. I was like, oh my God, how can they only sell this for $20? and like, I was, you know, spending my allowances and stuff on Magic ever since.
Love it. Absolutely love it. What a great story. And since then, since, you know, your origin, what has been your favorite set?
Ooh, that is a hard question. I want to say, like Scars of Mirrodin, just cause like, I really like gameplay, but like, if I'm honest with myself, I have to say Lorwyn in all four of those sets. I think everything about like Lorwyn, Morningtide, Shadowmoor, Eventide was just by and far just amazing. Like the gameplay for Limited, some of the sweet cards got for Constructed, art, the story, just so, every last bit of it.
Mm, so fun. And along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
One of my favorite cards, it really, really would have to be something along the lines of like Thoughtseize. One of my favorite things ever since the beginning of the game is to like look at my opponent's hand and choose a card to take.
So for those of us who might not know, what is Thoughtseize? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Thoughtseize is a sorcery for a black. You lose 2 life, but you get to look at your opponent's hand and choose a non-land card for them to discard. What's really great about this is A, you can take a really good card out of their hand so they can use it again. And B, you get to know what else is in their hand. And then plan your game strategy around what is in their immediate future.
Excellent, man. Just knowing what they have or the potential and being able to play around that in advance, it's definitely worth it. So that's good stuff. And thank you. Like, we've loved learning, you know, about your origins, some of your favorites, and kind of getting a little picture of, you know, you before we dive into the heavy duty Magic stuff. And when you started getting, you know, serious about Magic, what was an early aspect that you struggled with?
Early aspect, probably when me and my friends first discovered PTQs. We went down to actually a PTQ for New York 99, which I believe was the first Pro Tour or second. But like it was like definitely like going from kitchen table or local Magic scene to like the actual like competitive scene. Mm-hmm. And at like a lot of the older pros and even some of the historians of Magic will tell you like back then competitive Magic was not a fun place to be. People would literally cut your throat for that blue envelope to go to the Pro Tour.
Hmm. Dang, that's rough. So what did you, like, how did you navigate that? Like, what did you learn? What did you take away? Like, you know, tell us more.
So like initially back then, like, those first interactions at competitive play just kind of like put me off it for a little while. And then I went back to, for a state championship back in 2007. That's when I started coming back into the game and actually thinking about being competitive. And I just figured like, you know, let's just give this a shot. You know, try and wrap my head around, you know, what it's like to be competitive without being, you know, too much of a jerk about it. You know, just kind of like, you know, play your games, play them tight, and, you know, don't let your opponent get away with stuff. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the last like 10-ish years, like, I've actually enjoyed competitive play more and more as I go on.
Excellent. Absolutely excellent. Wow. So it's always fun to hear, you know, those things, especially stories from, you know, back in the day, since many of our listeners haven't been playing since Revised. It's always fun to tap into that. So what have been some of your milestones, your Magic milestones, leading up to your Grand Prix, like other events that you had that you look back on and say, hey, you know, I was growing and improving, and, you know, these events that stand out to you?
Probably like some of my big milestones were like that States tournament in 2007, which was a Time Spiral Lorwyn standard. I top-aided that event like really, really easily. I had previously been working on porting over Guillermo Wafotapa's Pro Tour list, which was his blue-black control list from Time Spiral Block, putting that over into standard so I can play it at state. And the night before, we had grinded a bunch of games, and I was just losing and losing and losing to my friend Chris Goslin. He had built sort of like an anti-control aggro deck. And so I went home, retooled everything to sort of like fix the problems I was seeing in that match. Got absolute zero sleep for this event, by the way. I was up all night on some random chat program with my friend, and we were like throwing back ideas for cards and stuff. Get into the car, go down to the tournament, and just everybody was like really, really eager to play with these new Planeswalker cards. But in my encyclopedic knowledge of random magic cards, I realized that Psionic Blast was A, in Time Spiral, and B, killed Planeswalkers. So I killed a lot of Planeswalkers that day with Psionic Blast out of nowhere. Nice. I top eighted that event, and somewhere in the semifinals, the lack of sleep kind of got the better of me. I made a couple of bad choices and lost that match. But it was like my first top eight that I really felt good about because I put the effort through, you know, and did the things I needed to do to get to where I was. And it just felt great.
Yeah, that sounds really great. You know, wow. Yeah. I mean, other than the fact that you had no sleep and, you know, choked at the end, like, that's really neat that you, you know, put in that effort. Like, you were testing, identified what wasn't working, and just went and boom, pounded it out and got something together that did work. Yeah, and you mentioned your encyclopedic knowledge of magic cards. So you just remembered cards?
It's not that I remember all cards. I remember like random cards.
Oh.
Things like Shulkin Brownie or like Azwing Leprechaun, like things that are maybe not useful all the time, but at some point, like, I could probably find a use for it down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, how are you with like relevant, like current cards, you know, like, if you went to a limited event, are you pretty good at knowing, you know, what the tricks are and the removal is based on what mana's up?
Yeah, like when a set comes out, like I'll try to quickly identify like all the good removal spells,
right?
And the better creatures, and I tend to just kind of like write off in my mind the creatures or spells that just don't matter in the format.
Yeah.
I'm actually the new Naga that's in Hour of Devastation. It's 2 and a green for just a 3/3, like. It's all right, but I don't think I'd actually really like be excited to have that in a competitive deck.
Right, right. Yes, that. I mean, yeah. So having a good memory and being able to, you know, remember cards that you've seen, whether it's for constructed, you know, deck building, or for, you know, limited in the middle of a game, like that's such a good skill to have. So that's neat that you have in one way, shape, or form cultivated that for yourself. That's really cool.
So like when I went to my first pre-release, which was actually Mirage. We didn't have the internet.
Oh, wow.
So Wizards didn't actually give you the full spoiler. What they used to do was to send like a handful of cards to a couple of magazines like Scry and Inquest. And then they would give a breakdown of some other things that are in the set, but they wouldn't tell you exactly. So like, when I went to like the Weatherlight pre-release, sitting down, getting ready to open our stuff, and we're talking about the set, and one guy's just like, yeah, I heard there was like this land that's like a Black Lotus, and you know, open it up and there it is, like Lotus Veil. Like, all right, this is pretty cool. But like a lot of the actual limited play at pre-releases solely came off of your ability to say, is this good or not? With a generalization, like, is a 2/2 for 2 any good? Yeah, kind of. But if it's a 2/2 for 2 with an ability, it's probably very good. Much better.
That's cool. That's really cool. So your journey through Magic has, you know, had ups and downs, like every player has, starting back in Revised and all the way up to now. But we would love to hone in on two specific moments, one being your worst Magic moment. So take us there and tell us that story.
Probably like GP Chicago, whenever that was. It was also nicknamed GP Grand Theft. It was the legacy GP where literally 50 plus players had their backpack stolen.
Wait, what? Oh my gosh.
Oh, you haven't heard this?
No, tell me.
Yeah, there was literally a group of like four or five guys just going around the GP and stealing backpacks left and right. I don't know the end result. I know that they were caught, but I think they only got one guy.
Oh my gosh. But
everything was recovered, which is very good because as far as I understand, it was like they found like over $500,000 worth of Magic cards, cell phones, iPads, and various electronics in their hotel room.
Wow.
But this was probably like one of my first GPs that I seriously traveled to. Me and my friend, Chalmer, we drove from New Hampshire to Chicago, because we were excited to go play this legacy GP. Mm-hmm. I had to buy based off of the old ELO rating system. So I was like, this benefit that could, potentially really help me. And I was playing, Legacy Goblin or Vile Goblins, and it just didn't pan out. Like I went 1-3 with that buy and just dropped and like literally just didn't play Magic for the rest of the weekend. It was kind of just devastating to put that effort to get to the event and just mm-hmm. do absolutely horrible.
Oh man, that stinks.
My bag didn't get stolen,
but
so
your
I had
bag
something.
Didn't get stolen. Yeah, that's good. That's good. But looking back on it, what did you learn? What were you able to take away from that event?
You should always put in some amount of effort. Like me and my friend, like we put almost no effort into that event. Like we just play our legacy games like every week. Because at the time, legacy was huge here in New Hampshire, and we literally just took our pet decks and we're like, we know how to play these. Let's go. We didn't like read the metagame or look at any recent tournament results or anything. Like we went in so blind. It wasn't even funny.
Man, sometimes it's those experiences that, we learn more from, and so it's very interesting to, tap into those and to see what good can come from it and just try and learn and grow and move on and hopefully share that with others so that they don't fall into the same trap or make the same mistakes. So very interesting. Obviously the flip side are our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Oh, I think that would be my recent top 8 at GP Las Vegas.
Excellent. And which event?
The modern.
Okay. Super cool.
So Saturday.
Man, tell us about it. So first of all, Vegas, awesome. I was not able to go, but triple Grand Prix, lots of cool stuff going on. Were you able to experience anything other than, your main event, or were you just there heads down playing Magic the whole time?
I had signed up to, judge at that GP.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So,
I bet they needed a couple judges.
Yeah, something like 300 or 400.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah, I was on the setup crew on Tuesday, and then I judged side events Wednesday, Thursday, and I worked the first day of the limited GP on Friday.
Okay.
And outside of that, I got to hang out with my friends that I was rooming with, went out to a couple shows. Got to go to a couple of nice restaurants.
Nice.
That's it was
good.
A good time.
Did you check out the art show that they had there or any of the side panels? When you were in the hall, you were judging and doing your thing?
Yeah. When I was in the hall, I was judging, and then if I was in the hall and not judging, I was searching for my friends to ride back to the hotel.
There you go. All right. Well, sweet, man. So tell us about your event. So you did the modern one. Obviously, it turned out pretty well for you. But I guess kind of walk us through, I guess, a few key things on day one and then day two, and then we'll rewind and go to tournament prep. But let's hear about the event itself.
Yeah. So I decided to play robots for the event because it's the deck I had been playing for the past, like, I want to say 6 or 8 months now. And I had been working on foiling it out. And, well, it was foiled out already, but I was working on getting masterpieces for it, which I finally succeeded in doing. So I was like, you know, I got to take this thing out for a spin. But when it comes to modern, I'm more in tune with the metagame and like what's actually happening.
Okay.
But in any given, like when you go to a GP, like you always want to go with the deck you're most comfortable with. That is probably one of the most important things. Like, you know, you want a deck that you can play well, you know, you all your outs, you know, your matchups, you know, way ahead of time, you know, it's a lot better than just saying like, oh, hey, I'm going to pick up Ad Nauseam because combo's good this weekend. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know how to like split second works. You know,
yeah.
If you don't know the intricacies of your deck, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
Like one of the things with robots is if you're not good with what they call Ravager math, you're going to have a bad time. But I had been grinding local events like PPTQs and stuff like that to get up to 2 buys because I had had this plan to play in the modern event at Vegas the day they announced that it's happening.
Good for you. I like that.
Like, this event just sounds amazing. Like I want to be there for all of it, and I want to definitely play in one of them. I had worked up my 2 buys just in time for Vegas. So, you know, rounds 1 and 2, I didn't get to play. Round 3, I got paired against Burn. I was like, all right. I beat him game 1, just because, like, when it comes to that matchup, like, they have a lot of Burn spells that are just going to go your face, but you have a lot of creatures that basically attack every turn and attack for more than their creature and are just more consistent in damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if when they're drawing off the top of their deck, if they pull a land, that does no damage. Whereas if I pull like a Darksteel Citadel, I can probably do something with that. I can sack it to a Ravager. It can give bonuses to my Cranial Plating and stuff like that. So, you know, pretty much like every card in your deck is sort of live in most situations.
Yeah.
So I beat him 2-0. What was it? Oh, and then round four was interesting because I had to play, I think that was round four, where I had to play John Stern from Canada in the mirror. I believe he got a game off of me, but our actual builds were a little different. Whereas he was playing Welding Jar and I wasn't. I think that was part of the big difference that gave me the edge, because Welding Jar just doesn't do damage. Whereas, like, I think the difference between our decks is he was playing Master of Ethereum and I have Etch Champion in the main. So, you know, his Vault Scourges and Master of Ethereum can't do anything to my Etch Champion.
Right.
So I ended up getting him. And then the next few are kind of blurry, just because, like, I wasn't really paying attention. So, like, a lot of my friends on Facebook will have this tendency, like, once they start the event, they post their GP thread to, like, update all their friends. I don't do that until I have day 2 locked. Okay. Otherwise, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Round 6 is the one when I really remember. I'm paired against Storm at 5-0, and we end up drawing. The question I get a lot is, how did you draw with Burn? Or not Burn, Storm.
Storm.
He wasn't very skilled with his deck. Apparently, his friends had given him the deck like the night before, or he had just picked it up that week or something. But his turns were just taking so long. And I actually had to signal a judge to come over and watch for slow play. It was that actual serious. And he ended up getting a warning because he took a, he literally took a 10 minute turn.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And he didn't kill me in that turn. So, this was in game three. So he takes his 10 minute turn. He gets his warning, but then he appeals it. The head judge upholds it. And then we're given our time extension of, the 3 minutes that the call took. But, when you get a warning for slow play, the extension is whatever the time was plus two additional turns when you go to time. So instead of playing five, we're going to play seven additional turns at the end.
Okay.
And he had actually, I had managed to get him to exhaust his grape shots. He had used one and flashed it back to like wipe out some of my creatures. And then when he was, storming off, the second time, he had started off by playing, Gifts Ungiven, which searches your library for four different cards and your opponent gets to choose two to put in the graveyard. So I chose his grape shot and something else to go to his graveyard. And then when he flashed it back with Cast in Flames, I was able to spell pierce, spell snare it, which would, because it's being flashback, just exile it and he gets to do no damage.
Perfect.
Yeah. So then he was left to just trying to beat me down with his Goblin Electromancers and his Baral. And it didn't quite get there and we ended up going to time and drawing.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah. I wasn't entirely thrilled about it just because. No.
Yeah, draws day one are pretty rough. They make getting into the top eight much harder.
Yep. Zach Hill, if anybody listening remembers, used to write for Star City. He actually wrote an article of pretty much just about why you should not intentionally draw into day two of a GB. Mm-hmm. But that was actually written back when the cusp of day two was 7-2 versus the 6-3 now.
Got it.
A lot of people, like, they would just lock day two and ID because they didn't want to play round nine. And it's actually, overall, it's actually pretty bad for you.
Right.
Because you don't want to use your ability to ID that early in the event. And when you get to later in my story, you'll find out why. So I get him, which is round six. So round seven, eight, and nine, I played against, I believe it was Eldrazi Tron in round seven, which I hadn't had a lot of experience playing because just nobody around me has the deck. One of my friends does, but we seem to never get paired or we never have time to play. Surprisingly very good, in my favor. Just because they tend to go in on their one big Eldrazi guy, like a Thought Not Seer or a Reality Smasher. Whereas by the time they've assembled their five mana for a Reality Smasher, I've already played like two Ornithopters, two Signal Pests, and a Vault Scourge. And I'm already attacking for more than five and some of it's lifelink. So, I smashed him up pretty good.
Yeah.
And round eight, I don't really like attribute to my play skill. My opponent seemed physically ill during it. Mm. He was playing Bloom Titan, which is with the Amulet of Vigor and the Karu lands and Primeval Titan.
Right.
And it just seemed like, so like he just had this weird look about him, like he just wasn't into it. He made a couple of bad, straight up mistakes here and there.
Yeah.
And I think just the way he was feeling, like he had like a couple of engineered explosives that just like wrecked me a few, like in game two, I believe. He was like, He played one for zero, which got like an Ornithopter Memnite in my Mox Opal, which like, took me right off my mana. And then later on, he had one for two that got a Vault Scourge, a Cranial Plating, and my Steel Overseer. So those were really
good picks.
But ultimately, I got him behind on life in game three, and he tried for another Engineered Explosives, but I actually had a spell Pierce for it, which is such a good sideboard card. I'd actually have to look at Facebook to remember round nine.
Yeah, that's fine. Don't worry about it. We've gotten some really good meat from you out of these other stories. That's really cool. So, so you get into day two, obviously, and then pick out like two key things that got you into the top eight.
Two key things.
Or matches. Or
well, probably round. It was definitely just round 14 and 15.
Yeah.
I was kind of steamrolling people on day two. I lost round 12 to Manny Devati, who actually won the GP.
Yeah.
We
just had him on the show just recently, so that's cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's actually a really cool guy. Like, come to find out, he's actually friends with some friends of mine in Seattle.
Oh, yeah? Awesome.
Yeah. So they also vouch for that he's a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
It was round 14, I had to play against a kid, very young, but it was actually the mirror match again. And like, I was happy to beat him, but I wasn't because, I'm sure everyone that's listening is familiar with the term dream crushing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what I did to this kid.
Because you won, he didn't make it.
Yeah. So like we're now at, 11-1-1, paired across to each other. And I ended up beating him game one. In game two, he just mulls to five and the game just wasn't even close. We got to a point where I had exactly one more creature than him. So my strategy was literally just to hook up a Cranial Plating to whatever thing and just attack, force in the block, and just eat a creature every turn. He tried to stabilize by playing a Vault Scourge, which I had a Spell Snare for, and it was like I kicked his puppy. Like, you could see the wind leave his sails.
Yeah.
Like, I hooked, you know, I attacked in for lethal the following turn. He extended the hand and the dude just broke down. And like, I was happy that I won, but like, I just did not feel good about the win.
Right.
Because, I mean, this kid couldn't have been probably even in college. He could have been like 18. And he had mentioned just before the match that he had gotten there. He had gotten to the point that we were at with one less buy than I had. And I was like, man, he's probably feeling really good. This isn't going to be good.
Yeah.
He was really upset after the match. And I just didn't feel good about that. So going into round 15, my friend Alex Lloyd actually helped me with my tiebreaker math to see if it was possible for me to intentionally draw.
Okay.
Turns out, nope. The problem with GPs being as large as they are is that like Swiss rounds are kind of designed for the person that has no losses and people with one loss to make top eight, typically.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll hear like, you know, people talking about like an X2 sneaking in or like with certain numbers, like two or three of them can get in. Not the case with 3,400 players.
Okay.
there was actually exactly room for, one XO. And was it, I think in the end, it was like, I think Manny was in first. Somebody else was in second. I had 40 points going into the top eight and I was in third. but then 39 points went all the way down to like 19th place.
Wow.
Yeah. So, so like a draw in round 15 would have put me in the 20s, mm-hmm. and a loss would have been in like the 30s or 40s.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge event. But coming off of my previous round, I sat down, you know, across from my last opponent in the Swiss. And I was just like, you know, there's a lot on the line here, man. So like no hard feelings either way. Let's just have a good game. He's like, yeah, man, cool. You know, just, you know, try and keep it somewhat friendly, even though like we both literally had everything on the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he won the die roll and plays turn one, Eldrazi Temple, taps it to play an expedition map. And right there, like, I knew I'd locked top eight.
Why is that?
I had played Eldrazi Tron about four times previous.
Okay.
And had just 2-0'd it each time.
Okay.
Like, something truly catastrophic would have to happen for me to not beat him.
Okay.
Turns out it didn't. And I beat him. Like, on his last turn, he attacked me for like 14, and I just like let it in because I was at like 28, and I had him dead on the crackback. Mm. So we filled out the match slip, and I went outside and called my wife and started crying.
Ooh, you made it. You made it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible. Wow. And what did it? So then, what was your final finish in the top eight?
I ended up in third.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah, I beat Craig Wesco in the quarters and lost again to Manny Devati.
Dang.
So,
what did that mean for you to make top eight of a Grand Prix? And I mean, made it all the way to third was super awesome, but to get that top eight.
Yeah. Oh, just absolutely everything. Yeah. Like I've wanted to play on the Pro Tour ever since we first heard about it. Like, it's just so cool. And then I had friends that had played on the Pro Tour and they told me about it. I'm like, man, I just want to go there. Back when they still had public events at the first modern Pro Tour, like it was in Philly. So like we actually, put a trip together and we went down just to see it. And it was pretty awesome. I was like, man, this is what I want to do. I want to play on the Pro Tour. And even if it's just once, like if I show up to Albuquerque in November and, you know, 0-3 my draft and just completely like get smashed and constructed, I'll have at least done it once, which is what I wanted. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to try.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And what's your plan to prepare for the Pro Tour? Since it's your first one.
Like I've talked with a lot of people that have played on the Pro Tour. And the general consensus that I keep hearing is before any Pro Tour, like you definitely need to work on your limited game. They recommend, I've heard the average number of drafts you want to do before a Pro Tour to be about 30. So I'm going to do 60 or 75.
Perfect. That's good.
Yeah. I'm going to definitely put my nose to the grindstone and do as much work as I can. And I have a whole team of friends that are going to be testing standard because a lot of the times with constructed, like, you know, you can pick up a deck and learn it, but you really need to know the ins and outs because, to qualify for the next Pro Tour, you need to at least go 11-5, but you can't go 11-5 if you don't win a draft game at all. So
very interesting.
So,
neat. And do you have anybody that you're going to be testing with?
I have some of my local friends. Like we're all in a Facebook chat constantly together.
Awesome.
Talking about stuff to do, even when for any event, really. But we're going to be testing Disrupted and Draft, and we're actually going to go to our buddy Matt's parents' place over in Austin, New Hampshire, for a weekend and literally just draft all weekend. That'll be a lot.
Yeah. So as you have played Magic for many years against many opponents and just seen, you know, play thousands of games, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make?
Biggest mistake. It's actually a pretty general one. It's like, you just have to pay attention. Like, you know what your cards do, know what's going on in the game. Because, you know, if, like, say if your opponent plays a card and it's in, like, Japanese, definitely call a judge and get the Oracle text, even if you know what that card is. Like, it never hurts to check. You know, when they play a card, read it. And if your opponent, like, if you're having trouble understanding your opponent, don't hesitate to, like, have them speak up. Make sure you know what's going on in the game at all the times. And definitely know what's in your deck.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. I think that's, you know, some great advice. Call a judge if they play a foreign card, just to double check, you know, pay attention, know what's in your deck. Like, those, yeah, those are things that can really sometimes get overlooked, but are important to upping our game for sure. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of life?
Well, that's a really good question. Probably be, basically planning ahead. You know, cause like, you really can't play the game turn by turn. And like any deck you pick up at any time, like, you need to be always thinking ahead as to what you're going to be playing the next turn. Like, say you open a hand of like land, Dark Ritual, Hymnotorak, Thoughtseize, and some other, like Black Knight. You know, what do you play first? What are you going to play next turn? You know, is it, if you're on the play, is it important to get that discard spell off before your opponent takes a turn? Probably not. You know, you just need to, you know, plan ahead. And, honestly, planning ahead has become a skill of mine, especially when it comes to like traveling to GPs or vacations or just like, you know, house finances and stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
It's always important to look ahead.
Man, that's key. I love that lesson. Now, in terms of Magic, what are some of your shortcomings? What are you working on as a player that you're trying to shore up?
Actually, rules knowledge.
As a judge, I can see that being important.
Yeah, it definitely, it's important on both ends. Everybody has their strong and their weak point. And some of the more complex parts of the comp rules are definitely a shortcoming of mine. A lot of people, so like, one of the analogies for the judge test. So like level one, do you know how to cast a spell? Sure. For level two, hey, guess what? There's like five steps to casting a spell. And then for like level three, hey, on second thought, there's like 10 or 15 steps to casting a spell.
Oh my gosh, that's nuts. Oh wow, that's so intricate. How did you get into judging anyways?
Actually, just about 5 years ago, my 5-year anniversary is next month. So back in 2012, I took a position down in Manchester, New Hampshire at Double Midnight Comics to be their quote unquote magic guy. Basically to help them, you know, learn how to buy and sell cards and run events and stuff. And in my interview, I was just like, you know, I've never really thought about being a judge, but if that's something that's needed of me, I would totally do it. And a few months later, I ended up taking my level one at GP Worcester, or I think they called it GP Boston. That was in Worcester at the time.
Cool.
Yeah, the judge program's awesome. Mm-hmm. I've met a lot of cool people through it and made a lot of good friends.
Great. So what are some resources that you turn to when you're keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic?
Ironically, I don't read a lot. I know, you know, there's content sites like Star City Games or Channel Fireball. I don't read. I should probably read more. But like, I'll log in every day. I'll go over to Daily MTG to see if there's any cool announcements or like reading the daily update.
Right. Good stuff, man. Absolutely awesome. What would you say is your best format?
Modern.
Good.
I love modern for multiple reasons. Probably like the baseline that I was excited about when they first announced the format is like I instantly started like building deck was that it's not going to be a rotating format. The problem I always had keeping up with standard is that you would invest time and money in these standard decks, and once they rotated, like you just didn't have a deck, or that $20 card that you bought because it was really good at the time is basically worthless. Whereas modern cards just seem to just go up and up and up. So
what advice would you give to new modern players? What's one thing that they should focus on?
Learn the archetypes. There's a lot of them, and you kind of need to know what each one generally does. Because like some people will play certain archetypes, but they'll have a few differences here and there. Like if you're playing against like a deck like Azban Company, they could have like four different win conditions in the deck, or just a I don't lose condition.
That's my deck, by the way.
Yeah, because now they have the Devoted Druid, Vizier combo to get infinite mana and just kill you with a gigantic Walking Ballista. Mm-hmm. Or they could actually just stick to the old fashioned Viscerous Seer, Murderous Redcap.
Yep. Yeah. That's my deck, man. That's what I play. I love that.
I'm actually building that right now.
Yeah. I need a few more pieces too, but yeah, I love it.
I'm actually, oddly enough, still looking for two Viziers of Remedy.
No way.
Yeah, because nobody has them.
That's funny. Oh, good stuff, man. Yeah, so modern is fun. It's nice that it doesn't rotate, because then people like me who take their sweet time and put their deck together, I always know when I finish it, I'll finally... You'll be able to play it. I might need to update based on whatever's going on currently, but at least fundamentally, at its core, the mana base should be pretty solid, and so that is one really nice thing about modern. So, good stuff.
Like new Speedlands came out.
Right. Yeah. So, yep. Updating that kind of stuff. So, where can we find you in the future? What events do you have lined up?
Quite a few, actually. I'm actually judging at GP Toronto next weekend.
Nice.
Which would be in the past by the time people hear.
Yes, that is true.
I'm looking at going to GP Indy, and I'm definitely going to GP Phoenix, which is the weekend before the Pro Tour.
Excellent. Yeah, we love watching past guests do great things. So, Prodigies, a quick reminder, if you want to connect with Ben, you can do so on Twitter. You can find him at Ben_Kenobi with a C. That's Kenobi with a C. So, look him up there, and you can find Ben Corsi online. So, Ben, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to do with us here at the end?
Probably the thing everybody says. You want to get good, just play as much as you can. It is probably the overall best advice anyone can ever get. You can't get good at this game without actually putting in the time.
And Ben, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse, and thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences, and thank you for being a judge, like getting out there and making events possible for Magic players to go and enjoy. That really means a lot to the community, so thank you. You are a hero among Planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Ben, thank you so much for being a guest on MTG Pro Tutor. Episode 227 is now in the bag, and Prodigies, you know where to go. mtgprotutor.com/BenCorsi is where you can find the show notes, where there will be a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. And as we close out, I do want to say another thank you to the patrons who make the show possible. Thank you so much for all your support. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, you go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. One of the perks is that you get entered into a monthly drawing for patrons only, where the prize support is provided by Paragon City Games. So thank you so much, Paragon City Games, for your support. Feel free to check out ParagonCityGames.com to see what they have going on. And then definitely come by the store and visit them if you are local to Utah. So thank you so much for joining me again. I absolutely love doing these episodes with you. Good luck if you're going to GP Denver this weekend. And good luck if you're doing any kind of magic, whether that's FNM or just playing with friends. Get out there and play. Have some fun. Be a force for good in the community. And until next time, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.